Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. Get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.
From KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. If you're a brand consultant for space, you know, the great abyss beyond the Earth, you've had a complicated few weeks. Travel to space, or at least near it, used to be the province of nation-states battling for global supremacy. Now it could be seen as a rocket-measuring contest between billionaires. But we can't let billionaires steal space, too, and so we want to have a conversation with an expert panel and you about what the real future of space should be. But first, we'll check in on PG&E's new plan to bury power lines in areas most at threat from wildfire. That's all next on Forum, after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. PG&E announced yesterday that it will bury power lines in high wildfire risk areas of California. That'll mean 10,000 miles of lines, enough to reach about halfway around the Earth. The utility says the plan would also eliminate the need to order power shutdowns during high fire risk events. What are your questions about the announcement? Give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or you can send us your questions by email at forum@kqed.org. Joining us to explain the ins and outs of undergrounding power lines is Scott Aronson. He's the Vice President of Security and Preparedness at the Edison Electric Institute, which represents investor-owned electric companies in the U.S. Welcome, Scott.
Good morning, Alexis. Thanks for having me on.
So I want to walk through some of the basics. I mean, the biggest one is, will this work? Is this possible to underground 10,000 miles of power lines?
It's certainly possible, but it's also certainly an audacious goal. I think as it was announced yesterday, in my experience, I cannot think of a larger capital project that includes undergrounding that much line. But I will also say PG&E has some experience in undergrounding that many companies do not. They have been doing pilot projects all throughout the Northern District to deal with this high fire threat region.
Yeah. I mean, just as recently as 2017, PG&E was only doing 30 miles of undergrounding before they began this expansion. I mean, for other utilities, like, what's the largest project that you could think of?
So I can't think of a project as far as a substantial undergrounding of an existing overhead network that is even close to on par with this. The closest thing I can think of to dealing with effectively a new threat is Florida Power and Light back in 2005. If you're listeners and you remember, 2004 and 2005 were just extraordinary hurricane seasons down in the Southeast. And as a result, Florida Power and Light took on an extraordinary effort to harden a lot of their infrastructure to do flood monitoring. monitoring to deploy smart meters to change some of their operations and maintenance and some of their response capabilities. But I'll also tell you, and this is sort of an important point about the nature of undergrounding, they didn't underground much of their infrastructure in protection against hurricanes for a couple of reasons. One, the topography and geology of Florida just doesn't allow for it. And so they had to take a regional approach that made sense for them. And over the course of several years, this was a decade plus long project, they completely hardened their infrastructure to be better prepared for their threat, which tends to be hurricanes. But as we look at Northern California and California broadly, there's going to be a lot of different approaches that are going to be taken, including undergrounding as a way to mitigate fire risk.
So when we talk about undergrounding, can you just, you know, on a basic technical level, how deep is the trench? Like, are we digging down a really long way? Do we use the same types of materials down there that we do with overhead infrastructure?
So it is a little bit different. I don't know the particulars of the construction process. I do know that there have been updates and upgrades in the ability to bore long distances. I also know that it depends on, again, you'll hear me say this a bunch,
the geology
and topography of the region. So if you're in an area with a high water table, you're not going to go very deep. If you're going through bedrock, it's going to make it more challenging. So, you know, I know this is always the cop-out answer of it depends, but it depends.
One listener asks, if we put existing lines below ground, can we keep the above ground lines to double the grid capacity? I'm guessing the answer to that is no, because of the other infrastructure around the lines. But could we get more capacity out of our grid in this way as well?
So that's a fascinating question. I would say, I'll give you the it depends again, but the answer really is, the decision to go underground, particularly for these 10,000 miles, is because the fire risk is so great in those areas that the calculus of, is it worth the cost of putting it underground? And if so, then we're going to take that project on, sort of by definition says that we don't want to have the lines above ground. Now, in some places to increase redundancy, in some places where maybe the fire risk is not as great, but we also have, but we also have the opportunity to increase capacity. That may be a part of the decision-making process as this evolves. Mm.
So we know that lots of European countries have underground power systems. And Beth writes, and also other places in the U.S., Beth writes, why has it taken PG&E so long to do this? From September 9th, 2015 until October 1st, 2015, we endured hell here in Calaveras County because of the Butte Fire caused by PG&E power lines that touch untrimmed trees. We have friends and neighbors who 6 years later have not rebuilt because homeowners and property insurance rates soared or have become unavailable. I understand you're not PG&E and can't speak for them. But one thing that I wanted to ask about this is, when a utility is changing a major infrastructure project like this, how do they go about financing something? Because I'm guessing that cost is the primary reason why this hasn't happened yet.
Well, there's a few answers to that. Yes, cost is part of it, but I think what we'll see as far as how this is going to be financed is an open and transparent regulatory process that will dictate the best way to finance this capital project. The second part of that, though, is with respect to the threat. Look, the risk has changed. Climate change has increased the severity of storms and drought and wildfires. Couple that with some of the advances that have been made in the ability to underground in a more cost-effective way. And then the last thing I would say is, given all of the different tools that companies have in their toolbox, undergrounding being one of them, but it by itself is not a panacea. Looking at things like microgrids, looking at better system segmentation, looking at enhanced vegetation management, all of those have costs associated with them also. And so the cost-benefit analysis of, does undergrounding make sense given all of these other cost that we may incur, the answer is becoming yes. And then the last part is with PG&E specifically, I can simply say they have a new leadership team and they're plotting a new course for the company with, they're bringing great operational expertise to the challenge. And they have made the decision that undergrounding for the purposes of protection of life and safety and property, coupled with all of the other capital improvements that they're making to their system, that this is the right time to take on such an extraordinary project.
Yeah. Michael tweets, it seems to me that to have underground power lines in mountainous country, PG&E will have to blast through solid rock because there just isn't enough dirt to dig a trench. So how realistic is this? The second question is the one I want you to address, though. Can PG&E get any money from Biden's infrastructure bill for this? Has the infrastructure bill helped utilities with this kind of upgrade?
You know, there is an interest here on Capitol Hill. I'm talking to you from Washington, D.C. There's interest here on Capitol Hill to make all of the nation's most critical infrastructure more resilient. That may be true. That's true of the energy grid. That's true of gas and water infrastructure. That's true of our roads and highways and all of that. So there is definitely a role to play from federal financing in addition to sort of traditional approaches to that electric companies take to finance these capital projects. Again, an open process, and I'm certain that PG&E, and frankly, all of the companies across the West who are dealing with increased fire threats are looking at different ways to improve and harden their infrastructure.
So I think PG&E's cost estimate was north of $15 billion. And I think my question, and probably a lot of listeners' question, is can we trust an estimate like this? Your Institute put out a report on undergrounding that we were looking at yesterday. And one of the things we noticed was just that the cost seems to vary tremendously. And so it seems very difficult to pin the number down. How would you think about a cost estimate like this and how, the rate base of PG&E should be thinking about this estimate?
So a couple of things there. It's a range, and it's got to be a range, because as your caller noted, going through bedrock, going through more urban areas, going through really remote and difficult terrain in some of the forested areas, all of that is just a huge challenge. So it's really hard to pin a number down. I will say the scale that PG&E is able to bring to this challenge is really impressive. And the experience they've got from their pilot undergrounding projects, as well as the ability to bring additional kind of operational experience to the undergrounding process, should continue to drive costs down over time. I think that report that you're referring to, it's a little bit outdated only because so much has been gained in the ability to bore long distances just in the last 10 years that I think that's going to have an impact on the cost estimates as well.
And it is worth noting PG&E says they've already seen that they're able to drive the cost down when they're doing more undergrounding. Carolee writes, what will the impact of underground power systems be on wildlife and the environment?
You know, I'm not equipped to answer that, except to say I think the process of burying them, because these are invasive projects where you're going and literally digging, is going to have its challenges associated with it. Although environmental impact statements and all of that work that goes into making sure it's as minimal impact to wildlife as possible will be there. You couple that with the fact that you will not have power lines above ground. Ultimately, I might argue that it is going to be better for wildlife and general scenic beauty of the region.
You know, from a maintenance of the infrastructure perspective, are there any downsides to undergrounding that listeners should be aware of?
There absolutely are. When you put power lines underground, when something does go wrong, it's just simply harder to fix it. We have examples from all over the country of buried power lines, usually in cities, a city that might flood. And when you have that kind of catastrophic flooding, you've got to wait for the water to recede. You have to find where your faults are. You have to get underground. It's just not as simple as, restringing wire and resetting some poles when they come down from a windstorm, for example. I would also note that you're in a part of the country that suffers a lot of earthquakes. And so while the fire risk is more imminent, and that is why the risk decision was made by PG&E to bury 10,000 miles of line, should there be an earthquake, that's going to challenge them to be able to restore even more efficiently. efficiently and quickly.
Yeah. We've been talking about PG&E's announcement that it will bury 10,000 miles of California power lines with Scott Aronson, Vice President of Security and Preparedness at the Edison Electric Institute. We'll be back with more Forum after the break, talking about space.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.